Hello and welcome to this podcast from the BBC World Service. Please let us know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
It was the biggest environmental rally in the country's history.
The Franklin River blockade captivated and polarised a nation.
You're under arrest.
My job is now on the line.
There's been a threat that you'll be assassinated.
I'm Jo Lauder. Join me to relive all the plot twists and find out why it still matters so much today.
If enough people stand up, we can win.
Saving the Franklin. Season 3 of the ABC's Dig podcast. Search for it now.
Hello, thanks for downloading this podcast from Witness History on the BBC World Service. I'm Rob Walker. In today's programme, the story of a Somali Air Force pilot who faced a terrible choice. Either bomb civilians in his own country or refuse and face the prospect of being shot.
The fighting is between the government and the main rebel grouping, the Somali National Movement. Since 1981, they've been opposing the military dictatorship of President Mohamed Siad Barre.
In May 1988, rebels from the Somali National Movement launched a series of lightning attacks on the main towns in the north of Somalia.
Tonight, there's confusion over just how far the SNM rebels have advanced. Certainly, the radio station went off the air.
By this point, the president, Siad Barre, had become deeply unpopular. And to hold on to power, he'd increasingly relied on support from his own clan. But at the same time, he'd also systematically discriminated against the main clan in the north, the Asak, and that had led to the rebellion by the SNM.
These pictures, shot on the rebel side, show members of the SNM moving freely in several areas of Hargeisa, the biggest town in what was once the British-ruled part of Somalia.
By the beginning of June 1988, the rebels had taken control of most of Hargeisa. The government forces fell back to the airport, and as they did so, they were ordered to begin the indiscriminate destruction of the city. That meant planes taking off from Hargeisa Airport and then turning straight back round to bomb the city itself.
The government used aircraft as well as artillery against the rebels in Hargeisa. The pictures from the rebel side show the consequences of the fighting.
Ahmed Mohamed Hassan was a fighter pilot in the Somali Air Force at the time, and he was based in the south of Somalia.
I was following what was going on. I was hearing on the radio about the planes operating out of Hargeisa Airport. But then I was ordered to be part of it, myself as well. And I was given 4 days' notice that I was being sent to Hargeisa.
And what did you feel about that when you heard that you were going to be sent there as well?
I couldn't believe that there were other pilots taking part in the war. I couldn't believe it. And I felt it was impossible for me to be part of it. And so I started to think about how to avoid it.
And if you were to say at that point to the government, I don't want to go to Hargeisa, I don't agree with what's going on, what would have happened to you?
Well, that would be unthinkable. I mean, it didn't even enter my head, not once. Because to refuse an order was to be shot, and for them to shoot someone meant nothing to them. It was absolutely impossible for you to even criticize the government then.
A few days later, Ahmed and another pilot were ordered to take two MiG-17 fighters and fly together to Hargeisa to report for duty.
We arrived in Hargeisa between 4:30 and 5 p.m. and I saw so much smoke, so many blazing fires. I could see many parts of the city on fire. When the planes were taking off, the artillery shelling from the ground would be paused, and then when the planes landed again, the shelling would start again. It was continuous artillery shelling and then the planes attacking, non-stop, one after the other.
So by the time you arrived, you could see that a lot of destruction had happened to the city already.
There was a lot of destruction. It was just unbelievable. How could they do this and do it to their own people? I couldn't understand it.
An American aid official who's just visited Hargeisa says a quarter of the town lies in ruins. There have been heavy casualties on both sides and among the civilian population.
The following morning, we were taken to the military headquarters, me and the other pilot I'd arrived with. We were then told that our mission was to bomb Hargeisa, but it was known that there were civilians still in the city. I felt just a sense of horror.
Later that day, Ahmed and the other pilot were ordered to begin their first attack on the city, and the two of them took off together from Hargeisa Airport.
We would always fly together, ascending as a pair. He was always a degree higher than me, and I was always behind him. But as we circled round Hargeisa, I called in to report that there were some problems with my plane. The air pressure was low, so I asked for permission to land and I returned to the airport. The other pilot flew on and continued his mission, and he shelled the city.
Ahmed says this issue with his plane was in fact one he'd already known about before he arrived in Hargeisa, but as it wasn't immediately dangerous, he decided not to tell anyone, in case he later needed an excuse not to fly. And so this is what he now used as the reason to abort his mission and avoid having to fire on the city. And so what did you do then? Did you make a report to your superiors about the problem with your plane?
Yes, an engineer was assigned to work on it. But that evening, there was a lot of talk at the barracks, saying things about me like, he doesn't want to fight, and things like that. But they did not have any real proof, so it was left for the next day to see if this was true or not.
That night, Ahmed's plane was made ready to fly, and he knew he was out of excuses to avoid taking part in the mission planned for the next morning.
We were to bomb the city, its homes and anything that moved. That was the mission. Just bomb the city. There was no specific place or building that was targeted. And each of our planes was loaded with 2 500-kilogram bombs.
And Ahmed, what kind of damage could a 500-kilogram bomb do?
It was catastrophic. You can't imagine. And it wasn't just once, but many times we were to bomb. Because the planes were taking off from the city and then bombing the city itself. So each flight would only take about 15 minutes. There was no need for refueling. So each plane could do at least 10 of these sorties, carrying 2 bombs each time. That means each plane would drop 10,000 kilograms. That is immense damage.
In the morning, Ahmed and the other pilot once again taxied together along the runway.
When we were both ready, we took off together as a pair, as normal, and as we climbed, he was ahead of me as usual. We reached a height of 500 meters, and normally, 500 meters is the height the bombs could be dropped at. But I continued to climb up and up.
By this point, Ahmed had already made a decision. His only alternative to bombing the city, he realized, was to flee, to fly north across the border into Djibouti. But what he hadn't worked out was where he was going to land when he got there.
I turned to the direction of Djibouti, and then they called me from Hargeisa Airport on the radio. My call sign was 35. They called me saying, 35, 35, do you hear us? And I told them my plane was having some issues, and after that, I shut down the radio. When I reached a height of 1,000 meters, there was cloud cover, which meant I couldn't see the ground. And I didn't have any navigation systems at all. All I had was a compass to identify the direction to take and a watch. So I was using time and distance, the direction Djibouti lies in, and how long it would take to get there at the speed I was traveling. And that helped me calculate when I would reach Djibouti. All the time I was in flight, I couldn't see any land. So when I thought it was about the right time, I started to descend. Then I saw I was at a place called the Tajura Gulf on the coast of Djibouti. I passed the city of Djibouti. Then I turned around and on my way back, I saw the emergency low fuel light had come on. So I descended straight away and I saw a small, clear area where I thought I could land on a stretch of beach. I had two options then, either to eject using my parachute or to try and land there. The plane I was flying hadn't been used for a long period of time before I'd brought it to Hargeisa. So I wasn't sure about the parachute working. So I decided to try and land in the small area, but I knew it wouldn't be easy to do so. It's called a forced landing, and there's a procedure to follow. You have to throw off the canopy hood so that you can quickly leave the plane. You're supposed to harness yourself really well. And when you descend and the plane is touching down, you have to touch down in a stalling manner. And I did all of that, and I landed safely.
Ahmed had landed on a beach on a desolate and uninhabited stretch of the coast, and now found himself completely alone. Just him in his flight suit, standing next to his MiG-17, with no one in sight. Eventually, though, he met two rather surprised fishermen, who the next day took him by boat to Djibouti City, the capital. Ahmed had reached safety, but he knew there was now no way of going home.
I had a family, 3 children and a wife, my parents, my siblings that I had left behind in Somalia. It was difficult. My oldest child was 3, but it was a choice between 2 evils, either kill people or escape to Djibouti.
Back in Hargeisa, meanwhile, the violence had continued. By the end of July 1988, Somali government forces had pushed the SNM rebels out of the city. But by this point, it had been almost completely destroyed, along with Buro, the other main city in the north. And government troops had also carried out mass executions of civilians, targeting members of the Issat clan. In all, it's estimated that more than 50,000 people were killed.
Most of Hargeisa's estimated population of 250,000 have sought refuge initially in the surrounding countryside, and the result has been a massive exodus across the border into Ethiopia.
Over the next few years, civil war in Somalia intensified. In 1991, the government finally collapsed, and in May that year, the SNM rebels unilaterally declared the north independent as the Republic of Somaliland. Ahmed, meanwhile, was able to reunite with his wife and children and start a new life in Luxembourg. In 2008, he made his first visit back to Hargeisa and was able to see a city that had been rebuilt. And Ahmed, you probably know this, but many people in Somaliland see you as a hero.
I cannot be called a hero. People are giving me what I don't deserve. I saw it as my duty.
Ahmed Mohamed Hassan, the pilot who refused to bomb Hargeisa, was talking to me, Rob Walker, for Witness History.